From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, June 26, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa, Tuaksuk Newsom, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, we'll chat with the Juno Chamber of Commerce about summer tourism and also about the upcoming Chamber Award nominations. We'll talk to Spruce Root about the deadline for their Path to Prosperity Business Development Program, which is June 30th. We'll talk about the program and what you need to know to apply. And we'll find out about all the fun on tap as we step back into medieval times with the Masters Fair happening this Saturday in Juno. Those conversations, Tonga's voices, garden talk, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikak gunish cheesh.
As your community-supported news source, KTOO is always guided by our public service mission to deliver facts and perspectives, bridge divides, promote shared values, and strengthen connections. It's what we've always done. So no matter what the news is tomorrow, KTOO will be here for you with trusted coverage you and your neighbors can count on. Your membership support makes it all possible. With our fiscal year closing out on June 30th, we encourage you to make sure your membership is up to date at ktoo.org.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Summer is here. It's beautiful weather, and of course, the tour season is in full swing here in Juno. And my next guest, tourism played a role in bringing her to Juno. She is the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce. It's our regular check-in with Maggie McMillan. Gunath Cheesh, how you good? Thank you so much for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you live in the studio. Wasa iti, how's it going?
It's going great. Always love coming down. And the sun seems to come out every time I come down here. So maybe we should do this more than once a month.
Yeah, it's really nice today. It's a pleasure to be outside today for sure. So hopefully you've got us on your trail walk or whatever you're doing this afternoon. So Maggie, I know we want to talk a little bit about the MOA and just clear up some things there, but I also want to hear about your story. Like, what brought you here? You mentioned to me that tourism sort of had a hand in bringing you to Juno. So tell us that story.
So in 2009, I moved here as a seasonal employee for Glacier Bay Lodge in Gustavus, Alaska. And I did that for the 2009 and 2010. I was their lodging supervisor. I actually went to school for hospitality management, though I don't use that degree per se. It's a business degree with customer service emphasis.
I mean, you use customer service in your everyday,
yep,
right?
And I use my all those accounting classes I had to take to, you know, manage the chamber's budget. So, yeah. I mean, it worked out for me. But yes, I used to manage, be a lodging manager in Glacier Bay National Park, and I fell in love with Alaska. But then life happened, and I became a mom in college, and moving so far away from family seemed impossible. But in 2018, I came back on a vacation to Alaska.
And that's how it gets you.
I went home and every day I thought, I need to get back there. And so in 2019, I moved me and my then 8-year-old up here full time. Mm-hmm. I used to manage senior housing in Juneau. And then during COVID, I switched to being in I didn't want to be so around the public. So I switched to working at the chamber. And after 2 years of being the assistant there, they promoted me to the executive director. And the whole point is I wouldn't have done any of these things. I sit on 8 boards of directors. I like to think that the work we do at the chamber helps this town, and the work that I do is beneficial to our whole community. And I wouldn't be here if tourism didn't exist in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah, for sure. And just clear up for those who may not know, the Chamber of Commerce, it's a nonprofit, but it works on behalf of businesses throughout Juneau, right?
Yep. We represent around 275 businesses, big and small, throughout Southeast. And first and foremost, we are an advocacy organization. And then, of course, we also like to have parties and throw events and allow people to network and make connections.
Yeah, of course. And you can find out all of this information and see all the different events that are coming up. JunoChamber.com is the best place. Or if you're a small business or you're starting a small business and you want to join the chamber to get all those resources, there's the monthly meetings, there's the different things that are coming up. You have a cool one tomorrow, actually. You have a
Southeast by the Numbers.
Yeah, Southeast by the Numbers, which is always a cool report that comes out. And that's at the chamber luncheon tomorrow, right?
Yes, and we do those bi-weekly. We have lunches every 2 weeks for chamber. And then during session, we have them on a weekly basis because there's so much to talk about
so
when
much going
session
on.
Is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so cool. Okay, so let's talk first about these chamber awards, because I think those are really fun. And there's a couple different ones that we have. And I was looking at the website today, and you can go to junochamber.com/awards. You're able to nominate different people. And there's a couple awesome ones. So let's first talk about Citizen of the Year.
Okay, so Citizen of the Year is the oldest award the chamber has done. They've been doing it since 1977, which is before I was on this planet. So it's pretty cool. We have more than one panel for that because we've been giving it away for so long. They get a big gold pan to put on their wall. That is awarded to someone who has done something in the last year that was above and beyond their job. They are a citizen that helped out. Last year's winner was Letitia McRae. And if you know Letitia, she is the lady with the big red truck with the ladybug on it that pulls over and picks up all the trash in this town. Yeah. And she does it with her own time and her own money. And she picked up over 2,000 pounds worth of trash behind Home Depot with volunteers, of course.
Wow.
But she organizes that. And I will tell you, anyone who organizes volunteers, it's not a small effort, right? So she gets these people together. She fundraises the money to get the dump fees covered. She makes art to cover her dump fees. Like, she's a fantastic woman. And so it was really cool to give her that award last year.
Yeah. And so if you know somebody, they have to be a resident of Juneau. Uh-huh. It can be an individual, a couple, or a group, right? Which is cool. They cannot be actively campaigning for office. And of course, the award, as Maggie mentioned, is in recognition of demonstrated community service, going above and beyond for the community of Juneau, which I think is really cool. And you can see, like, the past recipient list is like a who's who of Juneau.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing, going all the way back to 77. And just take a look on the website there, junochamber.com/awards, and you'll see all of those folks. And you just click this big button on here. It says click here to nominate, and you fill out the form and you're done. Okay, so the next one I want to mention is the Lifetime Achievement Award. How is that different from the Citizen of the Year Award? This is more over your life that you've demonstrated your service above and beyond,
there
right?
There are people on the Citizen of the Year Award that you might find on that Lifetime Achievement plaque, right? Because it's years and years of dedication to this community. It's usually a decade or more of dedication, right? Because I haven't been here for my whole lifetime, but maybe one day I'll be able to be eligible because I've been here long enough, right?
Right.
So if you've been here for a decade, if you're working hard for the community, our last winners were Jim and Cecilia Wilcox. And Jim, if you know Jim Wilcox, he is a character and it's almost like a little legend in Juneau. Mm-hmm. He is the most generous person I've ever met. It was really cool to give him that award. We have a scholarship fund at the Chamber of Commerce, and it's actually named after Jim and Cecilia Wilcox because they are
so
who
cool.
started it.
Yeah.
Very generous people. Year before that was Jerry Harmon, who's the founder of Gold Rush Days, who would do just about anything for anybody. So all stand-up people who genuinely make our town a better place to live and have been doing it for longer than I've been here.
Yeah, one of my favorite people, George Reifenstein, was the recipient in 2015, big supporter of KTOO over the years, and sadly passed away, but he's on the list as well as many other people you will recognize on here. And so just to remind you of that, so again, you have to be a resident. It can be an individual, couple, or group. Not actively campaigning for office. It's demonstrated community service over many years.
Yeah.
And that's what you're looking for when you nominate somebody for the Lifetime Achievement Award, which is pretty cool. And these nominations, how long are they open for?
So this one, they're going to close on August 9th.
Okay, so you have a little bit of time to think about it.
Yes, and we really want to encourage people. So for a long time, we've redone how we pick these awards and how they're nominated. And we don't want to be in this echo chamber of the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
We represent 275 businesses. This isn't a Chamber of Commerce award. It says Chamber of Commerce on it, but it's really recognizing people in the community.
Right, right.
Right. So it's a community thing. And we would really like to hear from all sorts of people, not just business leaders.
Absolutely. And the last award, which is sort of the newest award, mm-hmm. it's called Business of the Year. Tell us a little bit about that.
So when I started as ED, I proposed this because we're the Chamber of Commerce. And I thought, so we get the Citizen of the Year. And like I said, it's not really a business award. It's for mm-hmm. someone being great. I wanted to award business that do things above and beyond, like philanthropically or just take the call when they need to. Like, for example, last year, Cheeseman Construction got the Business of the Year award. And I'm sure you all remember when that river flooded and the banks all started collapsing mm-hmm. and you saw all those dump trucks going up and down River Road all day long. That was Cheeseman Construction. Yeah. They took the calls. They worked. They didn't take breaks. They worked until the job was done. They saved homes. They saved condos. They saved Riverbank. So it was really cool to give that award to someone that is so very humble. I don't know if you know Mr. Cheeseman, but
I do not personally know.
He would not come on stage to collect that award. We went to him. We handed it to him. He's very humble. He's a hardworking construction guy. He did not do that for the award. He did it because that's just who he is. And I think it's awesome. And we should recognize more people like that.
Absolutely. And on the website, you'll see there's a few more criteria and or requirements for this one. I'll quickly mention the main points of it, but criteria is growth and success, innovation, community involvement, environmental stewardship, workplace culture, industry leadership. So any of those areas that are possible. And this one's interesting because it says the business must be located and operating in the state of Alaska. So it's not necessarily specific to Juneau, but it does need to be owned and operated here in Alaska. And the years of operation, 2 years minimum, so it can't be a brand new business. And they have to be in good standing. What does that one mean?
So it means that they have to be in good standing with whatever licensing that they're supposed to have.
Oh, I see.
With the state.
Yeah, right. So it doesn't mean they have to be a member of the chamber.
Nope.
Right? It's just any good standing, positive reputation, and a commitment to ethical business practices. Of course, you can find out all of these information requirements and things on the website at junochamber.com for these awards. You have until first part of August to nominate in these different categories. And it's open to all to nominate, which I think is really great. That's just a good message to get out there. It's not just business leaders that can nominate this. If you attend a business or if you know somebody who owns a business or runs, or is just a citizen who's doing something awesome in our community, go and nominate them for this award. That's pretty cool. Okay, Maggie, let's talk a little bit about the newest. We've heard a lot about different things. We're not talking about ballot measures. We're not talking about any of that stuff.
No, sir.
What we're talking about is the MOAs that have been made between the cruise ship industry and the city and borough of Juneau. And there's a couple different ones that we've heard about. Can you clarify for us what we need to know as a listener?
Yeah. So the most recent MOA it was just signed really recently, and I should have the date in front of me, but I don't. But this one is the one that caps the amount of visitors that come into Juneau in a day, which would make it 16,000 people a day during the week and 12,000 people on the weekends. And I feel like there's some confusion around that, so I wanted to talk about it. This cap is on top of the 5-ship limit. That's a separate MOA. That does not go away because of the capacity limit. So don't think because now we're saying we have a cap on capacity that we're going to have more ships coming in. That's not it. We're having a capacity cap and a ship cap. So we're still 5 ships a day.
Okay.
And we're no more than 16,000 people a day.
So the ships, some of them can hold, 4,000 to 5,000 people, uh-huh. which 5 of that might mean 25,000 people. Now, we have to also understand a lot of times those ships aren't at capacity.
Exactly.
I had a question about that somebody asked me the other day. Does that include crew?
No.
Okay.
So it's because most of the crew doesn't come off the ship. Like, I don't think people realize that. Yes, some crew does definitely come off the ship and you see stores downtown specifically that are meant for crew, right? Like they're little markets, they're money or the Costco exchanges. Runs.
I go to Costco and I see the crew out
there. So no, we don't, they count, the 16,000 is lower berths. So lower berths are rooms at double capacity. So that's how they come up with 16,000 total. So it's.
And the other thing that I think people get confused about is they go, wow, 16,000 people, that's like half our population on any given day, right? But it's not always going to be 16,000 people.
Yes. And in fact, we're still going to see, we're around 1.6 million. We'll still be at around 1.6 million. This just keeps us where we are, right? And this might not stay like this forever, right? If our infrastructure grew, and we could have capacity to have more visitors, then the city and the cruise lines then would sit down and have that conversation. But they accept that that's not the time to have it now. We accept that we're trying to keep Juneau a great place to live and work, but we also want to be a great place to visit.
Right.
Okay. And we want people to come here to have a great experience, right? So the goal is to take 1.6 million people and figure out how to make it feel like 1 million people in this town by making infrastructure improvements, right? That's going to take some time. So the cruise ships are letting us do that. The cruise industry said, we would love to make sure that your community doesn't feel stressed. We're great partners. So we're proud of this MOA because it actually happened at the request of the chamber, not the MOA itself, but we asked the cruise lines and the city and the dock owners to come to the chamber boardroom this spring and sit down together and discuss our concerns for the community.
That's great. Yeah. So it's not like we're going to see 3 million people coming through. It's we're probably on track for the same amount that we had last year. And so that's all good news. And of course, the chamber does all kinds of other great things. They've got a golf tournament coming and they've got different fundraisers happening. And so you can go to thejunochamber.com to find out all the information about what's going on with the chamber. Maggie, it's always good to have you in talking about this stuff. Get out and enjoy this wonderful, wonderful day of weather. And it was so nice to see you again. Goodness, cheese for coming in.
Thank you. I'm going kayaking.
Kayaking, she's out of here. All right. Up next, we'll talk with Spruce Root about the work they do and the Path to Prosperity program, as the deadline to apply for the business competition is this Sunday, June 30th. But first, a recent episode of Garden Talk where Naomi Michelson shared some reflections on the practice of respectful harvesting.
My Tlingit name is Kase, after my grandmother, and Dao De'u, after my great grandmother. I'm Wishkitan, and I'm from the Shark House. And originally, our families were from Berners Bay, and we are Occoquan. And my father's people are Dakdaintan from the Huna area, also have European, Filipino, and Japanese descent. My English name is Naomi Michelson. I live here in Ketchikan, home of the Tontaquan and Sanyaquan people. And I have 5 adult children and 9 grandchildren. Respectful harvesting can mean a lot to different people. And so I like just having discussions and talking about it with people, because I didn't really grow up talking about respectful harvesting. We didn't say, hey, let's go out and harvest respectfully. But I think more and more today we are in today's world, it seems like it's things are changing so quickly that it is how we're talking and it is how we're going out. And we want starting with our young kids to kind of start with that idea that, before we even go out to harvest, who are the people that live in the land that we're harvesting? Build a deeper understanding and connection to the people on whose land you are harvesting. And so for me here in Ketchikan, it would be the learning about the people here, the people of Saxman and Ketchikan, and the Tontaquan and Sanyaquan people, and maybe even going out with them. And I had one of my first teachers here was Esther Shea, and she's passed now, but she was a wonderful Thlinkit language instructor, and she taught me a lot about some of the plants on the beach. So I would say getting to know the people in there in Juneau and the Akwan and acknowledging and taking time to learn and explore the history there in Juneau, including the traditions and values and knowledge, and understanding the history of colonization as well and how it continues to impact us today. And these guidelines you can find online. I'll give them to you. You can put a link up. But the next one is to prepare yourself spiritually. And I think a lot of plant books today, they might have identification. They might tell you about how to use them. They might have beautiful pictures. But a lot of our books today kind of skip out that the spiritual aspect and that connection that we all have with this land and the earth. And so it's something that the Kayani sisters who created the Respectful Harvesting Guidelines thought it was really important to put in there. Some people say a blessing or a song, a prayer. They might meditate. They might talk or sing to the plant. They might announce to the ancestors that they're there. So some people even said that their grandmother told stories the night before about the plant that they were going to harvest, and they would dream about this plant. And so I guess always just going out in a good way, trying to be, we don't want to go out angry or in a bad mood. next is, and these are in any, order, of course, but choosing your words carefully. I see it a lot in Juneau, especially with a beautiful language being taught in the schools at all levels. And so many people that are eager to learn the indigenous languages. And I could see the young children really changing. And it brings me a lot of hope to see that there's so much emphasis on teaching our young children the language and how important it is for us to, as Indigenous people, to feel like we belong and that we are a part of this, this beautiful place that we live in. So choosing your words carefully can mean a lot of different things as well. Many videos and stories talk about the plants. You could learn the words of the plants in the Thlinkit language or Haida, Hodkil, or Tsimshian. You could express gratitude in different languages. So those are always easy to learn, to say Gunakchish, Hau'a, Ndoikshin. Those types of words go a long way. And just practicing and developing our skills to become confident about talking to the plants and with each other as well. But those today, you can take a lot of these language classes for free. And I'm seeing the young children. I have a friend in Juneau, George Hawley. He's been working with a lot of the young children, and they're creating songs around the plants and the environment around them. And so it's okay to create songs as well. Another part of respectful harvesting is honoring and respecting your teachers. So in my life, I've been able to learn from many elders and many young people as well. And I'm still learning. And I try to always acknowledge that when I'm talking about something that they've shown me. And so, for example, Holly Churchill was one of my teachers when I learned how to gather cedar bark. And so I always acknowledge that. Rita Blumenstein was one of my teachers around the plants. And so I acknowledge her as one of my teachers. And so always acknowledging, the people of the land, the people that were your teachers. And I always would even gather for them as well, especially when they became older. And anytime I went out to harvest, I would gather something for somebody that I wanted to share with. And anytime I went to Anchorage to go see Rita, I would always bring plants that she didn't have there in Anchorage. And so it was always something that is just part of our responsibility and respect to share and to take care of the people that have been so willing to share the knowledge with us.
For more more Garden Talk, go to ktoo.org/gardentalk. You can subscribe to the podcast or keep listening to Juno Afternoon as we will play more episodes. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Spruce Root is a nonprofit organization who look to amplify Haida, Tlingit, and Tsimshian ancestral imperatives to ensure Southeast Alaska thrives for future generations, and whose mission it is to be a driver of a regenerative economy across Southeast Alaska. One of the many programs that they do this with is called Path to Prosperity. And here to share more about the program and how you can get involved is Mark Wheeler, a program manager at Spruce Root. Gunith Cheese, Ha'i Gudi, for joining me today. Mark, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Well, via Zoom, really, but you're still here. I can see you. Wasa'iti.
Wasa'iti, yake.
Yake. Yeah, it's so good to have you on. Remind us just first before we talk specifically about this program. I said a little bit there in the intro about Spruce Root, but give us sort of the overall picture of Spruce Root and its goals.
Well, first, this is the amazing lead-in you had with Naomi.
Yeah.
On Garden Talk. Naomi is one of the former winners of our Path to Prosperity business competition. And her business, Cassay Consulting, a few years ago won. And she's just a tremendous resource for the region and such a healing spirit. So super grateful for Naomi and a great example of our program. But Spruce Root is a nonprofit, native CDFI, which is a community development financial institution. And that means we can loan to folks who might be a little too risky for a bank loan with traditional financing. And CDFIs were started in the 90s under the Clinton administration. It was the idea to start community banks around the country and really bring the money, the financing to underserved populations around the world. So Spruce Root was formed around 2012 by Sea Alaska. And we were spun off a few years later as a standalone nonprofit. We have several programs that we operate besides the loan program. We have business support. So my job is to be a one-on-one small business coach for folks who are starting or operating or exiting a business. We also do trainings around business basics from time to time. We have an online business basics course. And we also do career coaching for folks looking to advance in their career. We also do financial wellness training and one-on-one financial wellness coaching. And then we serve as the backbone for the Sustainable Southeast Partnership, which is a community-based collective impact network that's rooted in communities around the region and are catalyzing community initiatives around Southeast Alaska. So we do a lot of things, but our roots are in the CDFI world and really trying to, like you said, drive a regenerative economy across Southeast Alaska with an intentional focus on the rural communities.
Absolutely. And you're doing great work there. And as people may remember, Mark was the founder and owner of Copa, one of the favorite coffee shops and former ice cream shops. And we all miss the ice cream for sure. But they're doing great work over there still with the new owner.
Yeah, we were one of the first participants in the Path to Prosperity program. We participated 2 years in a row, and the second year we won. And it really imprinted on us as an organization, the whole process with Path to Prosperity. You know, we have 12 finalists selected, and those finalists go through a three-day intensive training. This year it's September 12th to 14th. And in that training, we really drill down on the values that people have in starting a business. And, you know, why people are getting into the work, but also trying to encourage people to think about what's called triple bottom line thinking. So not just profit as a bottom line, but also people in terms of community impact and then place regarding environment. So to think about the impacts that our businesses are having in all three areas. So it was a big impact on me, on Copa. And it really drove a lot of our future growth and intentionality.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And I did, I was doing a little research on this and I thought this was interesting because this, the competition history for this is pretty major. Like for 11 years, more than 378 businesses and startups in 23 Southeast Alaska communities applied to the program. And the program has trained 157 finalists and awarded 24 winners a total of $720,000 to build their local businesses in Southeast Alaska, which is just fantastic. Now, I know for the Path to Prosperity program, there's a few different components. And I know today we're talking very specifically about the business competition because the deadline for this is this Sunday. So tell us a little bit about what people need to be thinking about to get their applications in for the business competition.
Yeah, so right now in phase one, the competition, it's a multi-phase program. And at this point, we're just looking for ideas that folks have of a new business or an expansion of their business. So it's a pretty simple application. It's like three or four questions. And the focus is, what need are you meeting in the community? And how are you doing that in a unique way better than your competitors? And then, like I said, with Triple Bottom Line, how is this business or expansion going to benefit the community? How is it going to benefit the environment? And how is it going to drive your profits? So it's a few questions, and we encourage anybody that has an idea to go ahead and enter. You can go to sprucegroup.org, and right there is the application landing. And if you have an idea you want to workshop, you can schedule a meeting with me, and I can walk through it with you, and we can maybe drill down a little bit and kind of hone that in. So those are due online by this Sunday at midnight. And then after that, we have an independent panel of judges. We're going to select 12 finalists. And those finalists are going to be from around the region and no more than two for each community. Because you realize, Juneau's kind of a big dog, so we don't want all these businesses to be Juneau. So it's intentionally spread out around the region. But those 12 finalists will come to a 3-day business intensive in September. So you got to commit. If you're going to apply, you got to commit to those 3 days, September 12th, 13th, and 14th in Juneau. And at that time, we'll go really deep on business planning, legal issues, marketing, just a lot of intensive stuff, and then how to write a business plan. And then those 12 folks will be invited to submit a business plan that again will be judged by a panel of judges, and two winners will be selected, and they will receive each $20,000 to help grow or start their business.
That's amazing. And what's really cool about what you're talking about is that someone can just have, because it's hard, right? You might have, you know, we do that a lot. Like you come up, you go, oh man, I could do that. I could have a business. Nobody's doing this one thing. But then you get stuck on like, how do I actually make that happen? What are the legal requirements? I don't have any money to do that. I don't know how to get the papers filed. I don't know anything about what's marketing anyway, right? Like, what does that mean? Yeah. I have this idea. I know what I want to do with it, but I don't really have the resources or the knowledge. And so this program seems like a great place for someone who, like you said, may have an idea. And even then, if it's an idea, like you said, you could call Mark and like drill down on it a little bit to get it more clear before you even apply. I mean, you only have a couple days to do that. But if you, like you said, if the beginning application is really just looking for ideas and kind of the starter seed, just a couple of questions to be asked of you, I think that's really cool. So I want to clarify too, Mark, who can apply for this program?
These are Southeast Alaskans. We're going to operate businesses in Southeast Alaska. So it could be for-profit entities. It can also be tribally owned businesses, but it's not open to nonprofits. So it has to be for a for-profit organization.
Okay.
And there's lots of great stories of winners in the past. Barnacle Foods was a winner in the early days. Icy Straits Lumber in Hoonah. Port Chilkoot Distillery up in Haines. So a lot of good track record. We had three winners this year. We actually had enough for three prizes. A couple folks from Haines, Four Winds Farm, and Adventure Harvest. And then here in Juneau, really excited for Holly Adams with Muskeg Munchkin. She's going to open a baby boutique in the Mendenhall Mall with lots of great products and featuring a lot of indigenous artisans and crafters in that store. So super excited about that. But yeah, it's a really helpful to kickstart a new business or grow into a new area of business. So, you know, like companies have different evolutions or, you know, you might need to, you know, just have a little bit of financing to bring things to the next level. And that's what the competition's all about.
Have some
another
folks,
cool thing.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say the cool thing about this business intensive we're going to do in September brings people from all over the region and it helps build a network of entrepreneurs. And it's pretty lonely being an entrepreneur, you know. You know, my wife and I are in business, but together. But a lot of times, you know, you're alone. You don't have anybody. You can't talk to your employees. You know, your spouse is sick of hearing about things. You know, so it's a lonely effort sometimes. So have these connections and this kind of support system where we can help each other out is really beneficial. And we've seen those connections grow around the region. And it's just, it's wonderful to build that ecosystem of support for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, it's really cool. I was going to ask that, you know, like the idea of, you know, is there an example perhaps of somebody who really just started with the seed of an idea and was able to sort of grow through this particular program? I know you mentioned some great ones, of people who've succeeded in this program, but is there one that stands out to you as like starting from just like the germ of an idea into a full business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know all of the past winners, but you know, Holly's a great example here. This last winner, she's just getting started. She had this idea. She wrote a wonderful business plan, did a lot of research, and she's going for it. She's starting this thing from whole cloth, and I really admire that. Her, I mean, because it takes courage to step out.
Oof, yeah,
and put yourself out there.
Yeah, but, does it help them? I would assume that like the winning this program or even being involved, even if you don't end up winning, would probably help you with, you know, seed funding from, you know, loans in terms of that you might be able to get. And I know you also have, you know, at Spruce Root, sort of the loan programs, the different other programs that people could probably spin off into as either, you know, if they don't make it into the final 12, there might be other things that they could do through Spruce Root, or they can use the knowledge if they are a finalist to go to the bank and be like, hey, I'm a finalist. This was a great idea. I have a lot of support here. Mm-hmm. I just need a little bit more seed money to get started.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why we started the program in the beginning is that we wanted to create a pipeline of folks for our lending program. And, you know, great example, again, I mentioned Holly again, that, you know, she won the competition, but at the same time, she took out a loan with us. And we have this new loan product, kind of a micro loan called Fast Start. And it's for loans up to $50,000. And it's a pretty abbreviated process. It's not like, you know, some loans you take months to get approved. This, we turn around in less than a month.
Wow.
And it requires a credit score of 675 or higher and a few pieces of paperwork, but it's super easy to apply for. I'm there to help people make their applications. And then we work with folks, you know, hand in hand to spend the money and to really have a plan for how they're going to use that money well. And folks who are in the competition, you know, as they win it, I'm there also to help them figure out how to spend the money well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're really, the cool thing about CDFIs is we're not just like a bank that you like, you get approved for a loan, boom, you got the money, and then they're gone. Like, we help you figure out your business plan. We help you apply for the loan. Once you get the loan, we're there to help you build your business, and then you might have hiccups. And with the CDFI, we can like pause payments for a couple months, like, because stuff happens.
Yeah.
But we have that flexibility and that care. And in the end, we have about the same default rate as banks, if not even a little better. So it's just a cool way to address community needs and get financing into the hands of people who might not have been able to have it you know, with a traditional financing program.
That's awesome. It's the Path to Prosperity program. It's through Spruce Root. You can go to sprucerootorg. There's a big button on there, big link you can hit and apply. This initial round of applications is due by this Sunday at 11:59 p.m. So if you have an idea, hop on there or give Mark a call. If you have any questions about it, there's some other folks there who can also help you at Spruce Root answer some of your questions before you apply if you need to. It's an awesome program. Spruce Root does some great work in this community, and we look forward to seeing who's in the program this year, Mark. And we'll have you on again soon to talk maybe about who's in the program or maybe the next winners that come around.
We appreciate you, Boston, and we're thankful for KTO's support, and good old cheers to you and station, and look forward to seeing those applications roll in.
Good old cheers. How are Toxic News? And thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate it. Okay. Up next, it's time to get medieval as the Masters Fair rises again this Saturday, June 29th, right here in Juneau. We'll have all the details next on Juneau Afternoon. But first, this week's Tongass Voices.
You're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Ken Hill opened Juneau Bike Doctor in 2018, but he's been a part of the biking scene in Juneau for much longer. Hill wants to get as many people on bikes as possible, and values giving back to the community. That includes supporting his favorite local performers from Juneau Drag as much as he can.
I've been involved in bike stuff starting back in the late 80s when I moved to town and started out sweeping floors and changing tires. Biking here in Juneau, it's almost like the community is perfectly made for someone to be a cyclist or to use a bike for transportation. You know, from one point to the next is typically not very far. One thing that we've been fortunate to have the opportunity to do is we do trade-ins with bikes where somebody has an old bike that they're not going to do anything with, that we may not necessarily put the bike back on the floor. We've taken a number of those types of bikes that during the fall we have time to kind of refurbish and get them up and running. And we've used those to get people on bikes that maybe don't have the wherewithal to find a bike. We also just did, we had a teacher from DZ who wanted to do something to help kids get back engaged with education. She's a bike person and we're certainly bike people. And so we thought that we would do a special bike for them. And then I thought, man, it's cool to have one bike, but there's a lot of need. And there's a lot of kids in schools that need a bike. So we kind of reached out to our audience and got a bunch of bikes that people donated to us. And we were able to do, I think it was 17 bikes is what we got built up and donated through that program. One girl received a bike, but turns out she already had a bike, but she wanted to ride her bike with her mom, and mom didn't have a bike. So that bike was transferred over to her mom, and so now we've got a family riding bikes together. And then we had another young man who had a bike, but his best friend didn't have a bike, and so now he's got a riding buddy. We work with groups like that. We work with the Juneau Drag Crew, do a lot with that group. NAMI does a Pride Outside event that we've been doing for, gosh, since the beginning. this is where I get emotional. That group, when my wife and I started dating, it was totally not something that I was involved in at all. I mean, I had queer friends. I had friends that were performers, but I just didn't feel like it was a place where I was welcome. And not that any of them wouldn't be welcoming to me. It was just my own perception. I went to a show with a couple friends and had just the time of my life. And I told my wife, I'm like, now what do? I don't want to just sit in the crowd because I'm not going to, you know, not everybody has a group that wants to go to every show, but I wanted to be at every show. And so I worked the door there for, 5 or 6 years, every show. And then when we did the big Glitz programs, I gave myself a title, the head of VIP transportation and security. So when we have out of town guests come, and I just met the most amazing people. And they've been super welcoming to me. there is kind of a non-traditional family in a sense with that group. And so I love them to death.
That was Juno Bike Doctor's Ken Hill for this week's Tongass Voices.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. This Saturday is the third Master's Fair. Billed as a medieval Renaissance festival, it will take place at the Juno... help me out with that, Sorsha. Is it Masonic. Okay, Juno Masonic Center on June 29th. It's hosted by Juno Rainbow and the Juno Masons. And here to share with me now about all of this is Sorsha Hazelton. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasaiti, how's it going? You're getting ready.
We're getting ready. We're deep into the planning. I've been stuck on my computer all day and didn't even notice the sun.
Well, you're going to be out in the sun. It's happening Saturday. It's from 11 to 5. And it's really cool. And just to remind folks, we're going to talk a little bit about the Juno Rainbow and what that is. And it's a chapter. And of course, the Juno Masons, everybody knows and loves because we're going to see them next week on the Independence Day. They're all the folks who drive the little tiny cars.
Yeah, the Shriners will have their little cars out. They'll be working on them this weekend. I'm getting them ready for their big yearly debut.
I love it. It's always and I love that they also always do the Douglas Parade too. Mm-hmm. It's just so great. It's such a wonderful thing. So how did this Master's Fair come about? Where did the initial idea come from?
So our Master's Fair was initially planned, I believe, for the summer of 2018.
Okay.
And at the time, our Masonic family was led by Doug Harris, and he had a brilliant idea to form a costumed festival. And he was the head of our lodge at the time and was very excited to, you know, put it together another community event. He's very history minded. And later that year, he was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. And so we put all of the planning that had been done on hold. And then came COVID. Mm. And so as we were coming out of COVID, we put together the first fair, and Doug was able to attend the first year. And so we will have some various tributes to Doug around. He's no longer with us, but he is always part of the planning that we do as we think about how Doug would approach our fabulous community.
Yeah, that's awesome. Has Juno had in the past, do you know if it's had like a Ren Fair years ago or anything?
We have heard tell from the Society for Creative Anachronisms, who does our sword fighting. They told us that they have been part of a couple of different events. The last one was hosted by the university.
Okay.
Maybe I think they said in the 80s, but I don't know like a long-standing fair that is similar to this.
Yeah, because I grew up in Anchorage and I know they have the Ren Fair every year, and it's been going for years and years and years, and it's been a lot of the same people over those years. So are you hoping that the longevity of this becomes like a yearly tradition?
We do. We hope that it gets bigger and badder, and we've got some really big ideas that we're not quite at the point where we can tackle yet, but we have similar dreams to the Anchorage Renaissance Fair, and we know Valdez just started their own fair last year, and they just had their second one this weekend, and so we've been kind of coordinating as new startup fairs, like how can we make this a cooler event from our communities?
Help us, give us the tips and tricks. What have you learned over the years, right? Ooh. In terms of from those folks, I'm saying like from the Ren Fair folks in Anchorage, they probably have a lot they can tell you about.
I did connect with the Anchorage Ren Fair, and then I didn't have like a cohesive question that I could answer them because the communities are so different.
Yeah.
And so I mean, I don't have a road system to pull from. I can't get people from out of town, vendors from out of town, performers or attendees attendees from out of town. So we wanted to really tap into what Juno has to offer, because Juno has so much to offer in terms of the various groups that, you know, maybe don't get the same opportunity to show off and make a cool event that showcases our community and that people can wear costumes to, because there are not enough costumed events in this town.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
That's. And it's billed, I know it's billed as a medieval and Renaissance, which, as you mentioned to me before we went on, are two different sort of time periods. But is that the inspiration that people should use when they're sort of bringing ideas of making costumes to attend? Or what's the suggestion?
We want you to wear the costume you're excited about.
Okay.
The family-friendly costume you're excited about. but we've had all sorts of costumes. We've had comic book characters. We had our social media has our great photo of a banana. Like, we don't care what your costume is.
Okay.
We want you to wear a costume, and we will have discounts for costumes for entry. But we love a costume. All of our organizations that host wear some sort of costume type thing. And so we love a costume, and we want you to love a costume, and we want you to have an opportunity to wear the costume we know you have.
Family friendly costume that we know you have.
Yes, family friendly costume.
And there is some food that's going to be there, including turkey legs,
yep,
right?
Yep, we've got a turkey leg vendor. V's Cellar Door will be hosting turkey legs and mutton stew this year.
Ooh, nice. Mm-hmm. Is there a tomato show?
No.
That's a future growth possibility.
We talked about some, we will have a couple pillories, or you might know them as a stockade.
Yes.
We talked about throwing tomatoes, but we felt that that was maybe a food waste issue.
Right, so true.
We try to keep those things in mind.
I wonder if there's something that could be called a tomato show, which is like people performing and you throw tomatoes at them. That's what that is, if somebody doesn't know. But maybe there's something that isn't actually food that would be sustainable or recyclable or something that would make that possible. I was thinking in my brain, like water balloons, that's probably not the same.
I was like, you just want to throw things at people?
That's exactly.
Okay, great. Maybe we'll get some like crocheted tomatoes.
that'd be kind of fun.
Okay.
Sponsors of this event and helping to host this is this organization, Juno Rainbow. And I want to talk about this a little bit because I hadn't heard of this before, but it's an international youth service organization serving Juno since 1932.
Mm-hmm.
It builds skills like confidence, leadership, organization through different events and different projects for girls from the ages 11 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit more about the kinds of things you do with Juno Rainbow?
Yeah. So it's a youth service organization that builds skills and character in our youth through the projects that they put together. So those are usually community service projects. We have an Adopt a Highway section, and the kinds of activities that we do depend on our membership. So our members, we're a youth-led organization in what our girls are interested in and what their passion projects are. And so this is one of the events that our youth were really interested in putting together and making sure that it happened. And the rest of our events are, whether they're sleepovers, whether it's an outing, we all go to the movies together, or we put together a food drive, or every October we do trick-or-treating for the food bank, and we donate hundreds of pounds of food to the food bank every November 1st.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so it's the projects vary greatly depend on what our youth are into at the time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it is Rainbow is a international organization.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're huge in the Philippines and Brazil are our biggest growing jurisdictions, but it's in 47 states as well.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome. What a wonderful organization. And it helps to put on this master's fair, which is happening this weekend. It's 11 to 5. Is there an admission price?
There is. We have ticket prices are $10 for adults and $5 for kids, and they're half off if you're in costume.
Half off if you're in costume. And do you need to do anything in advance, or do you just show up?
Just show up. Tickets at the quote-unquote door, but the door is a tent.
The door will be a tent, which is as it should be, right?
Yeah.
And that's at the Juno
Masonic
Center. Masonic. I think I get confused because the word Mason and then Masonic. So I get those confused because I think I have to say the word Mason in Masonic, but I don't.
Yep.
So that's something that I learned today. I like to learn something new every day.
There you go.
Which is awesome. Sorcia Hazelton is here. And thank you so much for this information. It's the third, I'm going to say annual, because I think this is going to be an annual thing. Mm-hmm. It's the third annual Master's Fair. It's a medieval Renaissance festival. It's happening this weekend, June 29th, at the Masonic Center, and it's hosted by Juno Rainbow and the Juno Masons. It's really going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully you get weather like today and you can get out from behind that computer and make it happen. Well, Gwyneth Cheese, for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Mastersfair.com is what we were just talking about, the website. And you can also Google it if you just Google Masters Fair. So that's good. Well, that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thank you, Sorsha. Have a wonderful Wednesday. On tomorrow's show, Juno Live TV Production Summer Camp, Juno Community Foundation, and info on the 2004 JDHS High School reunion happening next week. Can you believe it, all of you who graduated in 2004? Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. on our summer schedule here on KTOO, Juno 104.3, and KAUK, Juno Akbay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.